Call us, please, come to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Freeman.
Here.
Fuller.
Here.
Guy.
Here.
Halford.
Here.
Haugen.
Here.
Hurlbert.
Here.
McKinnon.
Here.
Malone.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Meekins.
Here.
Metcalf.
Here.
Miles.
Here.
Montgomery.
Here.
Moss.
Here.
Munson.
Here.
O'Connell.
Here.
Osterbeck.
Here.
Parker.
Here.
Parr.
Here.
Phillips.
Here.
Randolph.
Here.
Rogers.
Here.
Schaefer.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Jaroff.
Here.
Gardner.
Anderson.
Here.
Barnes.
Here.
Bettisworth.
Here.
Branson.
Here.
Buckholz.
Here.
Carney.
Here.
Chatterton.
Here.
Cotton.
Here.
Eliason.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
32 present, 8 absent.
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, the following representatives are excused from the call today. Representatives Buckholz, Cotton, Hayes, Malone, Miles, O'Connell, Osterbeck, Smith, Jaroff, and Gardner. I do note Representatives Malone and Jaroff in the body.
Prayer today will be led by Pastor Milton S. Hunt of the Resurrection Lutheran Church. Please rise for the morning prayer.
Let us pray. Almighty God, we pause for prayer on this day designated by Christians as Ash Wednesday. As this is a time for self-examination and confession, we admit our failures and our faults. There have been times when we've fallen far short of the high ideals which ushered us into our elected office. Sometimes we've felt the pinch as we have traded votes for some bill which reflected narrow interests rather than the good of all life. Forgive us, gracious Heavenly Father, through the merits of Jesus the Christ. Fill us with your healing spirit so that we may forgive ourselves and each other. Then out of the ashes of repentance shall come new men and new women to lead your people of this great land to new peace of achievement. Let your divine peace be upon us all. Amen.
The clerk, please certify as to the correctness of the Daily Journal.
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 44th day and House Supplement Number 18.
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 44th day and House Journal Supplement Number 18 be approved as certified by the chief clerk.
Mr. Guy, are you rising in relation to the correction of the... Okay. Technically, we have a motion pending, Mr. Guy. Mr. Anderson moves that the Daily Journal be approved as certified by the chief clerk. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the journal will be approved. Mr. Guy? Mr. Guy moves that the prayer be spread on the journal. Is there objection? Objection is noted. Prepared to vote. All in favor of spreading the journal, spreading the prayer on the journal, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. The prayer will be spread on the journal. House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. We're down to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction in the chambers? Brings us then to messages from the governor.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other house.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Finance has had House Concurrent Resolution 2 approving certain recommendations of the Salary Commission under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 2 and recommends that it do not pass. Report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman. Signing do not pass, Meekins, Freeman, Montgomery, Moss, and Rogers. Signing no rec... and Haugen. Thank you. Signing no recommendation, Guy... excuse me. Guy and Schaefer. Signing do pass, Duncan and McKinnon. House Concurrent Resolution Number 2 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs is at House Bill 28, providing for preferential presidential party primary elections under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 28 and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Eliason, Fuller, Parker, and Martin. House Bill 28 has a further referral to Judiciary. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 180 relating to certain state health inspection functions under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Munson, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Barnes, Hurlburt, Chatterton, Byrne, and Munson. House Bill 180 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 229 relating to a fee permit system for king salmon and steelhead trout sport fishing under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 229 and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman. Signing do not pass, Meekins, Freeman, Montgomery, Moss, and Rogers. Signing no recommendation, Haugen, Duncan, McKinnon, and Schaefer. Signing do pass, Guy. House Bill 229 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation in memoriam Grant H. Pearson by Representative Moss. I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill number 310 by Brown and Rogers, an act relating to purchasing by state agencies.
Commerce and Finance.
House Bill 311 by Brown, an act relating to transfer of public utility certificates of public convenience and necessity and providing for an effective date.
Commerce and Judiciary.
House Bill 312 by Hurlburt, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for road construction and improvement at Alakanuk, Eminuk, and Hooper Bay and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 313 by Hurlburt, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for construction of a boardwalk at Hooper Bay and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 314 by Malone, an act relating to optional property tax exemptions and providing for an effective date.
CRA and Finance. I might ask the Finance Chairman to take a look at that bill. That may not, on a quick reading, I couldn't tell for sure whether that had a financial implication or not. If it does not, you may wish to waive that bill, 314. Incidentally, yesterday, in reading in House Bill 306, I invited the CRA Chairman to take a look at that legislation to see if he thought it should come to his committee. He did. And therefore, House Bill 306 will show an additional referral to CRA committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the clerk please read the first item on the daily calendar?
House Bill number 18 by Miller. An act increasing the benefits being paid under the Territorial Public Employees Retirement System and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 18 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman, concurred in by Meekins, Duncan, Rogers, Moss, Schaefer, Guy, Haugen, Montgomery, and Freeman. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill number 18 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the bill is advanced from second to third reading. Will the clerk please read House Bill 18 in third reading?
House Bill number 18 by Miller, an act increasing the benefits being paid under the Territorial Public Employees Retirement System and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not on the Finance Committee, and I'm sure probably Mr. Duncan's going to address
some of the bill. My understanding is the bill really covers only three people and has a very small fiscal note, and I'm sure that he'll indicate what that is. But I just thought a little matter of history for the members of the House. One of the people that it covers is Soapy Smith's former newspaper boy, who is a former member of this body and one of the greatest figures in Alaskan history of the last 70 years, former Representative Bobby Sheldon from Fairbanks, who in about the age of 95 or 96 is still very much alive and is not in the Pioneer's home.
One of your constituents, I believe, Mr. Brown. Mr. Duncan?
Mr. Speaker, just very briefly, Mr. Brown's correct. It covers three people. The fiscal impact is $3,600.
Are you ready for the question? I presume we still don't have a voting machine?
We don't have.
Okay. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Freeman?
Yes.
Fuller?
Yes.
Guy?
Yes.
Halford?
Yes.
Haugen?
Yes.
Hayes? Hurlburt?
Yes.
McKinnon?
Yes.
Malone?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Meekins?
Yes.
Metcalf?
Yes.
Miles? Montgomery?
Yes.
Moss?
Yes.
Munson?
Yes.
O'Connell? Osterbach? Parker?
Yes.
Parr?
Yes.
Phillips? Randolph?
Yes.
Rogers?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Smith? Jaroff?
Yes.
Gardner? Anderson?
Yes.
Barnes?
Yes.
Byrne?
Yes.
Bettisworth?
Yes.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz? Carney?
Yes.
Chatterton?
Yes.
Cotton? Duncan?
Yes.
Eliason?
Yes.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes.
32 yeas, no nays, 8 excused.
Does any member wish to change his vote? I should say, has every member voted? Clerk may announce the call. You already have, excuse me. Does any member wish to change his vote? Not, the clerk may announce the final tally.
32 yeas, no nays, 8 excused.
And so House Bill 18 has passed the House. Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on House Bill number 18 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Mr. Anderson moves the effective date clause. Hearing none, effective date clause is adopted. Might note, Mr. Chatterton, when you voted here on that would have been a legal vote in the U.S. Congress. They can vote present, which is sort of a cross between the green button and the yellow and the and the red button, which is a sort of a yellow button. So, will the clerk please read the next item on the daily calendar?
House Bill number 34 by Rogers, an act relating to the preparation and distribution of a taxpayer's survey of the budget. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 34 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 34 and recommends that it do pass and attaches a State Affairs Chairman's report. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Fuller, Parker, and Gardner. Signing do not pass, Martin and Metcalf. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 34 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill 34 and reports it back with individual recommendations and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman. Signing do pass, Duncan, McKinnon, Rogers, Moss, and Montgomery. Signing no recommendation, Meekins, Smith, Schaefer, and Freeman. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill number 34 be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Mr. Anderson moves adoption of the State Affairs Committee substitute in lieu of the original bill. Is there objection? Hearing none, the committee substitute is adopted. Are there further amendments?
I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill number 34 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Mr. Anderson moves the advancement motion. Is there objection? Hearing none. Committee substitute for House Bill 34 is advanced from second to third reading. Will the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 34 by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to the preparation and distribution of a taxpayer's summary of the budget.
Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill results from my feeling that a taxpayer ought to know where his or her money is going, and also ought to know where else the state is getting some money. The bill requires that in the income tax booklet that each taxpayer receives, that it lists the expenditures by program category and the sources of funding for the state budget. We required in the State Affairs Committee substitute that the summary be not more than 6 pages, because the original fiscal note had it as a 33-page summary, which is a little more than I'd intended. The cost for this is $16,300. That works out to 6.5 cents per tax booklet, and that's really just the cost of printing. There's no additional cost of postage. The act terminates June 30th, 1982, so the next legislature can decide whether they want the taxpayers to know what they're spending money on.
Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've had considerable comment on this in the State Affairs Committee, and I'd like to ask the floor to consider voting against this. It looks innocent with this intent. There's no doubt that an informed public is a good public, and it certainly is a valuable part of our democratic system. We certainly realize, for one, when this is going to be sent out is on your tax forms, and everybody's not in a good mood at that time, nor will they take the time to read it. For instance, from our tax people, we find out that 20% of the tax forms are filled out by the CPAs. Most likely, a lot of people don't even look at the forms. I know I don't. As soon as I get the form, I give it right to the CPA and let him go through the mumbo-jumbo and figuring out how much I owe the government. You also find out that 50% of the people wait to the last minute to get their tax forms in, and this is on the state level, in by the deadline of April the 15th. Therefore, a chance of them reviewing 6 pages is pretty nil. And especially, we also have the opportunity for people to send their questionnaire back or their comment. And I think we're going to get a zero out of that. The simple reason is that in public mailing and private mailing, we know you're very lucky if you get 2% return on what you sent out. So 2% return on a questionnaire could lead a small group that's organized to certainly mislead those who might analyze the reports. But most important, I don't think that 2 pages, 4 pages, or 6 pages, number one, are not going to be read, number two, are not going to be informative. When we began this session, we had 3 books given to us. One was the governor's report on state financing, 551 pages. Then we had the state annual finance report, 296 pages. How many of us all read it, and how many understand it? Then we had the source of income book, which was 20-plus pages. The point is here, sir, is that there's no doubt in my mind that once this begins, with another department handling this, it's going to go way out of proportion from the original intent. And therefore, we can stop it now. If the people need to be informed, there's many other ways we can send them the information that they desire. Thank you.
Mr. Rogers and then Mr. Brown.
Yes, I think Mr. Martin was speaking to the original bill and not to the committee substitute, because the committee substitute has nothing about a questionnaire in it. That was my original idea. I thought the taxpayer ought to have the opportunity to let us know. But this bill is just for us to let the taxpayer know what's going on. In addition, there are no new positions created by the bill. The Department of Revenue testified that they can already do this in a very short amount of time, that it wouldn't require new positions, it wouldn't require a new bureaucracy, as Mr. Martin said. And also, the act terminates in 2 years. It's off the books. It's dead. And it's up to the next legislature whether or not we want to pass it. Now, one of the reasons that I put this in is that I think we've seen a lot of concern over the budget. Taxpayers are mad. For the first time in history, there's a chance that we're going to have a U.S. Constitutional Convention because of concern over the federal budget. And I think people ought to realize just what the state budget's being spent on. I think a lot of people don't know how much of our state budget goes for education, that's the major expense of state government. A lot of people don't know that their taxes are a very small portion, and that most of our state budget is funded by petroleum revenues. That's the kind of information that would be available in this 6-page or less summary. I don't think we'd have the problem with these 3 large books that we had on our desks, which a lot of people didn't read. in 6 pages, I think we could summarize it and give the individual the opportunity either to find out if they want or to skip the pages.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I suppose you can make the argument that nobody's going to read this. I suppose we can make the argument that therefore we ought to abolish the election pamphlet and all the other sources of information that people have, but I don't agree with that. I think the more information that we provide to people, the better informed voters we have and the better off we are. I think that the average, if you like, fiscal conservative in my district just has a feeling that the budget ought to be cut somewhere, but in the day-to-day life that he leads, looking after his business and family and job, he doesn't have that information available to us, and the dirty, rotten politician's reply during an election campaign always is, okay, well, where do you think it ought to be cut? What services ought we to cut? And it might be a little bit easier for the electorate to gang up on us with regard to answers to those questions. And also, I'm reminded somehow of when I was going to law school in New York, a strange experience from a guy from Alaska, that there was an ad for the New York Times on the subway. You know, the New York Times, the shortest issue I ever saw was 96 pages, and the ad says, you don't have to read it all, but it's nice to know it's there.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I think it's well and good that we make a substantial effort to inform our public, but in fact, this information is already available to the public through other avenues. If they so choose, they can look into where our revenue comes from and how it's spent. And I don't think that there are very many people out there who aren't fully aware that an overwhelming majority of our state revenues are produced by oil monies. And I think that this is kind of counterproductive, and I don't disagree with informing the public, and I don't disagree with this being in the pamphlet. What I do disagree with is the continuous, never-ending throwing one little more program in the fire, another log on the fire. Our huge budget is not a result of one or two big programs. It's a result of a multitude of literally thousands of little expenditures. And here we are throwing more logs on the fire in an austere year. There is a cost. There's a bill attached to doing all of this. And I think that the people of Alaska would like to see us do away with a few programs instead of instituting new ones. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Mr. Brown?
Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to rag it around a lot, but another member sent me a suggestion and a note here that apparently... with regard to the comments, and maybe nobody will read it, we encourage more people to read it by getting the Division of Tourism to design the cover for the thing.
Is there further question, further debate before we come before the House? But if the question is, shall the body adopt committee substitute for House Bill number 34? Clerk, may you please call the roll.
Eliason?
Yes.
I meant to say Freeman. Freeman?
Yes.
Fuller?
Yes.
Guy?
Aye.
Halford?
Yes.
Haugen?
Yes.
Hayes? Hurlburt?
Yes.
McKinnon?
Yes.
Malone?
Yes.
Martin?
No.
Meekins?
Yes.
Metcalf?
Yes.
Miles? Montgomery?
Yes.
Moss?
Yes.
Munson?
Yes.
O'Connell? Osterbeck? Parker?
Yes.
Parr?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Randolph?
Yes.
Excuse me. Rogers?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Smith? Jaroff?
Yes.
Gardner? Anderson?
Yes.
Barnes? Byrne?
Yes.
Bettisworth?
Yes.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz? Carney?
Yes.
Chatterton?
Yes.
Cotton? Duncan?
Yes.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes. Has every member voted? Clerk will announce the tally, please.
31 yeas, 1 nay, 8 excused.
Does any member wish to change his vote or her vote? Clerk will announce the final tally.
31 yeas, 1 nay, 8 excused.
So a committee substitute for House Bill number 34 has passed the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
Citation in memoriam James Estelle by Representative Carney, Representative Cotton, Senator Kurtulla.
Representative Carney.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citation pass the House.
Mr. Carney moves approval of the citation. Is there objection? Hearing none, the citation passes. Will the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
Citation congratulating Sitka High School drill team, winning first place in drill competition at Southeast Alaska High School basketball tournament, second time in a row. Requested by Representative Eliason.
Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the citation commending the Sitka High School drill team.
Mr. Eliason, ask unanimous consent for the approval of the citation. Is there objection? Hearing none, the citation is approved. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to move that the remaining citations be returned to the Rules Committee.
Is there objection to that motion? Hearing none, the remaining four citations are taken from the calendar and returned to Rules.
Mr. Speaker, even though I'm mildly out of order, just a short explanation. I have nothing against any of the people that are being commended. It's just that the Rules Chairman, who is not present, is from the districts that these people reside in, and it was a matter of courtesy to him. It was pointed out by the other members from Eagle River, and I appreciate their concern.
This completes the daily calendar. Brings us now to unfinished business. Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Moss be excused from the call of the House on March 22nd, 23rd, and 24th.
You've heard the motion. Is there objection? Hearing none, the member will be excused on the dates indicated.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative McKinnon be excused from the call of the House March 5th and 6th.
You've heard the motion. Is there objection? Hearing none, Mr. McKinnon will be excused on the dates indicated. Mr. Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move that this body rescind its action in adopting the motion to spread the prayer on the journal.
Mr. Parr, I move the rescinding motion. Objection is noted. Mr. Parr, you have the floor.
Could be Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry. I yield to Mr. Malone if he wishes to speak. Yeah.
Mr. Malone?
I was just going to ask for an at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah. House, please stand at ease. Come back to order.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's only fair to explain to the body why I'm making this motion. In the prayer, there was a section that says, we have traded votes for some bill which reflected narrow interests rather than the good of all Alaskans. Mr. Speaker, I'd be the last one in the world to question the right of free speech or the right of free exercise of religion. However, spreading this prayer on a journal to me implies that this body accepts that. Mr. Speaker, I do not accept it, and I do not feel I have done this. And I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on this motion, and I intend to vote against it. Your pardon, I intend to vote for rescission.
Yeah. Okay. I'll recognize you in just a second, Mr. Meekins, tell you what the procedure is, because I think this is the first rescinding vote that we've had. Under the joint rules, the motion is made to rescind. If the motion is successful, then Mr. Guy's original motion is back before us for another vote. So the rescinding motion itself is not, as it used to be a couple of legislatures ago, a flip-flop of our position. Two votes are necessary. So if the vote to rescind fails, then of course the matter is disposed of. If the vote to rescind passes, then we still have before us the original motion as made by Mr. Guy. Mr. Meekins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In defense of the motion by Representative Parr, I know that I've experienced this before, and I know that the press will probably try to make a joke out of his motion and out of the time that we're spending here. But I think he's got a very good point. Not only are we agreeing that on the record, on our official record, that we're trading votes for narrow interests. But even worse, in my view, is that we're asking forgiveness. In other words, we're saying that we need to be forgiven for such an action. And I think that's a pretty much over the line in terms of what makes good sense. And I disagree with that very heartily. I think he has every right to make his speech and make his prayer and put politics into it if he wants to. But I don't think it's proper for us to validate that by putting it on the record. So I'd agree with Mr. Parr in this case.
Is there further debate? Mr. Chatterton and then Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can only add one thing in support of Representative Parr's position on this situation. I think the public perceives this body a little bit with paranoia as it is, and for us to even say that we are trading votes, whether we are or not, well, I think would be inappropriate. Besides, is when it comes down to yours truly, Mr. Speaker, well, I feel that the gentleman that did write this prayer condemned me without a fair trial. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah. Mr. Malone?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The original motion to put this prayer on the journal was a voice vote. I didn't vote on either side of that question. Of course, there's no way that anybody could prove that either. But I think that we're making a mountain out of a molehill here. I think that I listen every day to a lot of things on this floor that I disagree with. And I don't always get up and say, well, I disagree with that, and I don't think that that particular accusation applies to me, or that what you're saying doesn't make any sense, or obviously you've got a very poor philosophy or something. We listen to that every day, and I think this is just another case where some members may not agree with the intent of a statement by the chaplain in the prayer. I don't think putting the prayer on the journal is necessarily an endorsement of the prayer. Mr. Speaker, I have certain religious beliefs and tenets, and sometimes the prayers that are given in this chambers don't always reflect those, and I don't object. So I think, Mr. Speaker, that what we have on the journal, adoption of the motion today, is the opinion of one person, maybe more than one person, but I would hardly expect that if it stayed on the journal that people are going to take that as an indictment of the legislature, an endorsement by the members of this body of some accusation. And I think that we would be better off if the pending motion were withdrawn.
Mr. Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, like Mr. Malone, I frequently hear prayers in this body which do not accord with my religious beliefs. I have not, so far in my fifth year, objected to spreading any of those prayers in a journal. I do not do so now for that reason. Mr. Speaker, I guess I'm just old-fashioned, but I think this is an attack on my honor, and I don't intend to tolerate it.
Mr. Randolph?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't going to say anything on this, but it seems to me that it wasn't a personal statement at all. It's kind of an old adage, if the shoe fits, wear it. I think the prayer is totally appropriate if there's one amongst us in all the years they've been here that have acted in that way. And, I think the minister had every right to make the prayer. I think we ought not to be even standing here debating this thing. I agree with Hugh that we're making a mountain of a molehill, but the mountain's there, and it just seems to me that it isn't something that the fact that it was said by somebody who I don't even know and who doesn't know me, I'm not taking the least bit personal. But I would say that if there's one amongst us in all the years we've all been here who has been guilty of what he suggested, maybe the forgiveness would be nice to have.
Is there further debate? Mr. Parker.
There's a note here, Mr. Speaker. It's not signed. It was passed to me. It says, let those who are without sin cast the first nay vote.
Is there further debate to come before the body? Clerk, please call the roll.
Freeman?
No.
Fuller?
No.
Guy?
Nay.
Halford?
No.
Haugen?
No.
Hayes? Hurlburt? McKinnon?
No.
Malone?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meekins?
Yes.
Metcalf?
No.
Miles? Montgomery?
No.
Moss?
No.
Munson?
Yes.
O'Connell? Osterbach? Parker?
No.
Parr?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Randolph?
No.
Rogers?
No.
Schaefer?
No.
Smith? Jaroff?
No.
Gardner? Anderson?
No.
Barnes?
No.
Byrne?
Yes.
Bettisworth?
No.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
No.
Buchholz? Carney? Chatterton?
Yes.
Cotton? Duncan?
No.
Eliason?
No.
Need to call mine.
Oh, Mr. Speaker?
No.
Excuse me.
Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please announce the tally.
Six yeas, 26 nays, 8 excused.
Does any member wish to change his vote or her vote? Clerk will announce the final tally.
6 yeas, 26 nays, 8 excused.
So the House has failed to rescind its action in spreading the prayer on the journal. Is there anything further to come before the body under unfinished business? Mr. Bettisworth, yes. And then Mr. Martin.
I would ask to revert to introduction of guests.
Without objection, the floor is yours, sir.
Mr. Speaker, it gives me great pleasure to introduce in the Gallery B Jim O'Sullivan, a member of the administration, a good friend of mine from Fairbanks.
Are there further introductions in the chamber? If not, we'll revert to unfinished business. Mr. Martin?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to, at this time, bring up my reconsideration for House Bill 47 amended.
Mr. Martin brings up reconsideration of House Bill 47, which brings the bill before us automatically in third reading. Mr. Martin, the floor is yours.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Speaker, what began out as
a... Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
I think your point is it should be read.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Correct, Mr. Brown. Will the clerk please read House Bill 47 in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 47 amended by the Judiciary Committee for an act entitled... an act relating to the sale of alcoholic beverages.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what began as a simple bill sponsored by Representative Parr is turning into a monster. The sponsor merely wanted equality in law. Wherever we had the word female was changed to person. The committee quickly saw the wisdom of this and unanimously approved the bill. Not until the bill came to the floor were there any negativeness expressed. Then Representative Brown took this golden opportunity to kind of grandstand on behalf of the B-girls and to give some colorful history of the Fairbanks in his younger days. We were all quite surprised at this tactics used by to refer the bill back to committee. And after further in-committee discussion, Mr. Brown's motion to repeal the law was turned down. Then it happened that a couple of key members had left the meeting thinking the subject matter had been ended. But Mr. Brown then began his action to gut the bill, such as Section D was approved, and then his maneuvering was stopped. Now, bring these details to you, Mr. Speaker, to bring to light how easy it is to circumvent a committee's decision. Why should we even waste time to have a bill go to a committee? Why not have the bill directly go to the floor and bring up the discussion on the floor? I believe it certainly would be more efficient and perhaps more enlightening to all the members. Mr. Speaker, we are about to do what we are about to do is not only to let the B goals, since that phrase was used for the original motion to bring it back to committee, back into taverns and bars to hustle drinks, but I also believe in this day and age we're going to end up bringing the G guys back to certain taverns and bars, who again will be regularly disturbing the customers and harassing them. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 47 be returned to the Judiciary Committee.
Objection is noted to the motion. Freeman, I'll recognize you in 1 second. I want to make one observation from the chair, if I may. That is relative to the names of reference to other members on the body in the midst of debate. Past speakers have been very liberal in this regard, and I intend to be that way too. However, I should remind members that we never, absolutely never, attribute motives, good or bad, to the tactics to other members when we're involved in debate. As a matter of fact, the rules, if we went by them strictly, and nobody ever has, so this isn't really being critical of you, but if we went by the rules strictly, we would not even refer to the other members by name. As I say, that's a rule that is frequently, in fact, constantly bent. But we do have to guard ourselves not to prejudge the motives of any other member in making statements. Mr. Freeman, you were seeking the floor? Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, Mr. Martin, you were seeking the floor, and then Mr. Brown.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize for that, and we'll adhere to your wishes. Mr. Speaker, what I'm asking for is the same courtesy extended previously to have the committee, the bill turned back to committee for reconsideration. This amendment dramatically changes a law, the concept of which the public has had no opportunity to evaluate. Now, yesterday after the vote, another House member came to me and suggested another amendment, which is very important because he happens to have a restaurant also. But in thinking it over, I felt that it would be best and more efficiently handled by bringing this back to committee. Thanks, sir.
Mr. Brown was taking the floor, and then Mr. Eliason.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the bill's been in Judiciary Committee twice. I may be the pot calling the kettle black in that I did on this floor come up with an amendment when the bill was before us the first time, having not raised the amendment in committee. I apologized at that time to the chairman of the committee in advance, asked if he had a problem with the amendment, since he's also the prime sponsor of the bill. It happened that I had a temperature about 104 degrees that afternoon with the Juno crud or whatever it was, and I wasn't in the committee meeting when the bill came up. I had also come in rather late that afternoon, not feeling well, but in order to sign the committee report, do pass if amended. I told the members of the committee about what I was going to do at the time. I offered the amendment on this floor. As a matter of courtesy to some other members who are not members of the Judiciary Committee, who raised that question, referred the bill back to committee. The amendment was discussed there. Many other good amendments were offered to the bill. I told the committee then that I would be offering the amendment on this floor. We then returned to the floor, and I offered the amendment. 21 people voted for the amendment, and 28 people voted for the bill yesterday. Now, this really is not the biggest thing happening in this legislature. With regard to the and to send it back to the Judiciary Committee at the time that we're trying to have markup on some other bills, would seriously delay the activities of that committee, and I think unnecessarily. And I know that you have mentioned the rule to the member, but I could have risen on a point of personal privilege in the midst of debate, and I would hope that the members read the uniform rules and Mason's rules with regard to decorum in debate. And there's at least one speaker that did follow it rather rigidly, and I appreciate it when he did, although I understand the views that many people have about the absolute nature of the First Amendment even after we walk into these chambers and have the rules. But I do not like to be characterized as grandstanding when I'm offering an amendment based upon my understanding of the Constitution. If I'm looking at something that's on the books that is patently unconstitutional and silly and has no business being there, I have a right to offer an amendment in committee, I've got a right to offer an amendment on the floor, and if the amendment passes and if the body agrees with me, that's perfectly appropriate, and it's not the time to send the bill back to committee. I would appreciate support of the members on the floor and defeat the motion and pass the bill on reconsideration.
Mr. Eliason.
Could we have a brief at ease?
House, stand at ease. House, come back to order. Pending before the body is a motion to return committee substitute for House Bill 47 to rules. Mr. Martin?
Mr. Speaker, if you would indulge with me, I would like to withdraw the motion. Thank you.
Mr. Martin withdraws the motion, which places committee substitute for House Bill 47 before us in third reading. Are you ready to vote? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 47 pass the House? Will the clerk please call the roll?
Freeman?
Yes.
Fuller?
Yes.
Guy?
Aye.
Halford?
Yes.
Haugen?
Yes.
Hayes? Hurlburt?
Yes.
McKinnon?
Yes.
Malone?
Yes.
Martin?
No.
Meekins?
No.
Metcalf?
Yes.
Miles? Montgomery?
No.
Moss? Munson? O'Connell?
Members, please refrain from speaking while we're having a roll call. Continue, Madam Clerk.
Osterbeck? Parker? Parr?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Randolph?
Yes.
Rogers?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Smith? Jarl?
Yes.
Gardner? Anderson?
Yes.
Barnes?
No.
Byrne?
No.
Bettisworth?
Yes.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz? Kearney?
Yes.
Chatterton?
No.
Cotton? Duncan?
Yes.
Eliason?
No.
Mr. Speaker?
No. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk will announce the tally. Cannot be at ease in the midst of a voting procedure.
22 yeas, 8 nays, 10 excused.
Does any member wish to change his vote or her vote? Clerk will announce the final tally.
22 yeas, 8 nays, 10 excused.
And so on reconsideration, committee substitute for House Bill 47 has passed the House. Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, lacking 27 votes, I move the effective date clause.
Speaker, Mr. Anderson, that's the catch-22 we got into yesterday.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, I withdraw my motion.
Mr. Metcalf, did you wish to add at ease? Okay. Mr. Brown?
Are we still under unfinished business, Mr. Speaker?
We are under unfinished business, yes, sir.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to waive referral of House Bill 291 and explain why.
The floor is yours, sir.
Speaker, House Bill 291 is an appropriation by Rules Committee by request of the Governor that was referred to Commerce and Finance. It is an act making supplemental appropriations for telecommunications. What it really is to continue to pay for the representation of the state before the Alaska Public Utilities Commission and the Federal Communications Commission in current existing cases. Because of the scheduling problems in my committee, I'm asking to waive the bill. I have discussed it with the finance chairman and one member of the finance committee. There will, in fact, still be some Commerce Committee participation on the subcommittee level when the bill goes to finance. So for that reason, I would like to waive referral on House Bill 291.
The bill will be waived without objection. Is there further business come before the body under unfinished business? Mr. Meekins.
House senators.
House, come back to order. The body is still under unfinished business. Is there further business to come before us under unfinished business? If not, incidentally, I might advise the members on one thing. In the midst of a roll call, and I've violated this myself because it's just a human tendency to turn to the guy next to you and say something. But we really should not engage in any conversations whatsoever. First of all, it makes it difficult for the clerk to hear responses, particularly when we're engaged in a voice vote. Even more important, the rule is a good one, because once the roll call starting, all the influencing, all the persuasion, everything else is supposed to have absolutely ceased. So it's an easy rule to forget, particularly on a roll call when it kind of gets long and involved. Nevertheless, it's one that we should adhere to pretty strictly. We're now under special orders. Anything to come before the body under special orders? Mr. Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, may I have the privilege of the floor to speak on the H in today?
We would have been terribly disappointed if you hadn't, Mr. Byrne.
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Speaker, because today is one H of a day, to borrow a line from you yourself, and I appreciate that line. Well, today is the effective date of the Alaska Homestead Act, and according to the Constitution, you know, you have to wait 90 days after the people pass a law through the initiative process to have the law become effective. So today is that day. Today is the day when the Homestead Act should take effect. But it doesn't take effect today, in fact, because of court action. But we should be out filing on our land today, you and me both, because I know you want your 40 just as much as I want mine. We have some important matters here to take care of, but we have a lot of unimportant matters too, and I think that we might be better off out filing on our land, getting our land in a lot of respects than sitting here today. A lot of people think it's a dark day in the history of the Republic, and in some respects it is, because the people have passed a law and the law is not going into effect. This nation was born to free and private land, with the government owning nothing but that 10 square miles on the banks of the Potomac River called Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. But today, 200 years later, the same government owns more land than the people own. And that may portend what's taking place in our nation, in our country, and what may happen in the future. It may soon be that we will all be the servants of the state rather than the masters of the state. We may be the servants now and don't know it. But obviously, when we can't get land out to the people, we aren't the masters. But today, all over the state, there are some signs hanging up, big signs, and they're all saying, you know, the homestead applications cannot be recorded here. I think every district recorder's office has them, and every lands office has big signs up to that effect. And so, what is the status quo of the Homestead Act that was passed by the voters last November at the general election? As you know, it passed by about 58% or 59% majority. Well, the status quo was simply this, that sometime around the first of the year, one of the Superior Court judges ruled that we couldn't, that the state couldn't spend any more money researching it or implementing the Homestead Act until the Supreme Court had ruled on it. So the issue was, appealed to the Supreme Court to see if they would agree with that stand, and they did agree with it. So in effect, the Supreme Court of this state has ruled that the Homestead Act cannot go into effect until the Supreme Court has had the ample opportunity to review it and issue an order on it. So that's where we are today, despite the vote of the people. And I hope that when the judges come down here and give us their annual report, that we'll have an opportunity to question them about a few things. I suppose the question that rises up here is, you know, should the courts interfere with the will of the people? There are times, I'm sure, when that would be proper. I don't think today is the time. In my opinion, the courts are getting a little bit too big for their britches anyhow all across the country, not only our state courts, but particularly our federal courts. They're trying to rewrite the laws all across this nation to fit their own concepts. And when the courts were originally designed under the United States Constitution, they were set up to interpret laws as being constitutional or unconstitutional. And they weren't, you know, the judges weren't given the authority to take any actions. But what they've done today is they've enlarged their powers substantially, what we call judicially active now, judicial activism, where they're taking executive action. They're taking powers away from the executive branch of government. They're taking powers away from the legislative branch of government. And we're sitting here like a bunch of stooges and let that happen. It's, I know there was an article in the paper recently, maybe many of you saw it on Maryland, where the federal judge there is running the whole school district. So that means that the school board, you know, is not really necessary at all. And none of the local government's necessary, because that federal judge there in that district, he runs the whole show. And to me, you know, that's flagrantly in violation of our United States Constitution. But nothing's going to happen until the people object. And I hope the people of Maryland will object strongly to it. There's another example going on down in California about what courts are doing. And I'm complaining about the courts because I feel that our state Supreme Court is not acting fast enough on this critical issue of the homestead lands. They've had it for months, and they could act, you know, on it if they wanted to. We researched it anyhow. We feel it's constitutional, and we don't think it's such a big deal. They could get with the program if they wanted to. But down in California, you have another example where the celebrated divorce case of Lee Marvin. Down there, the California law says if you're not married, that's it. But the judges are saying, well, maybe that's not it. You see, they're going to interpret the law and write the law the way they want. So what we do as a legislature doesn't seem to be important. It's what the judges think. And we've got a few tools to use in handling the judges, and I think we should use those tools. It's sort of an incredible thing to see it happen here, actually. Again, it's an H of a thing. But this morning I stopped by to see the governor just to remind him that, you know, this was Homestead Day. I wanted to ask him if, you know, what he was going to do about it. And I could see we're not going to do anything here, you know, or at least very soon. So I stopped by up there and I went down the hall and, you know, knocked on his door. And God, there's a big sign there, a great big sign like that, you know, and it says, gone to China. Well, you know, in the old days, you know, it said when the people used to hang signs on their shops back east and said gone to Texas, it really meant something, you know. It meant they were out, you know, for a new empire. But this one said gone to China. And down at the bottom it says, P.S., land office closed, you know. So anyhow, I was a little depressed by that. And so I didn't know what to do. So I got on the telephone. I tried to call the governor over in China. Well, I couldn't get a hold of him, and I tried to get a hold of this guy, Ping. You know, he's over there saying, you know, the two of them are talking about how they can keep the land rather than give it to the people. And so couldn't get a hold of Ping either. But finally, I got a hold of a guy by the name of Confucius. And Confucius said to me, don't worry, he says, Mike. He says, governor who go to China when people want land may get recalled, you know. So felt pretty good about that, you know. Maybe feel pretty good. May get recalled. But then he told me something that didn't sit too well. He said that Confucius says that he's sending back the governor with some instructions. And that bothered me a little bit. So he said, if you think it was bad before he left, he says, wait till he gets home with instructions. And then you have to remember that the governor took the attorney general with him. So when he gets back, you know, he wants to do everything nice and legal. He just wanted to have it all tied up. But we shouldn't blame the courts and the governor for everything, though. Honestly, we should look at ourselves because we make the laws. And if we make the right type of law, there's no question it's going to be enforced. The governor has no choice and the courts have no choice. It's easy for us to blame the governor and it's easy for us to blame the courts. But the truth of the matter is that we, the legislature, make the laws and we, the legislature, are responsible for following the constitutional, you know, orders. And we should do it. We should get the land out to the people. And we're really failing in our constitutional responsibility because the people do, in fact, have a constitutional right to that land. It says that in the United States Constitution, and it says it in our state constitution. And we should really see that they get their land and fast. I think that just the three branches of government are just paying lip service only, you know, to the concept of private ownership of land. I don't think any of our three branches of government are doing a thing, you know, to get that land out to the people. And that's a bad sign. It's an ominous sign. And it may indicate that this nation, as a great nation, has, you know, passed its high water mark and is on the downhill shot. But anyhow, it's an H of a day. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you know, you've already made the day because if you don't wake up, nothing else is important. So as soon as I woke up this morning, I said to myself, it's an H of a day, and thank you for the line.
For the business to come before the body under special orders. Mr. Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Just a couple of follow-up remarks on what Mr. Byrne was saying. As the only libertarian in the body, I haven't spoken on this issue or on libertarianism much, for that matter of fact, but I think the two go together so well that I'd be remiss in not saying something on this day when the Homestead Bill was supposed to become effective. Land ownership by all of us is extremely important, and as Mr. Byrne brought up, he who owns the land, you know, controls the people. And in western United States, in Alaska, we certainly have a serious problem. And I've talked to many people in this body and many Alaskans, and in people in this body say, well, you know, what can we do? We've done it. We've passed the six land disposal systems. The administration keeps flouting our will at every turn, and just what can we do? Well, there are several things you could do. And I'd suggest to Mr. Meekins, the Finance Committee, that you could zero out the Division of Lands. You could create a new division or a new entity with very firm, understandable, irrevocable procedures to follow to get the job done. We have that authority. You know, that's what we're here for. And we could, in fact, do it if we would. So to try to pass the buck is not an appropriate thing to do. We could all support the Burn Home Initiative, a homestead initiative, or something very similar to it, which would bypass the administrative bureaucracy, which is flouting our desires. We could rush through Mr. Bettysworth House Bill 270, which would revoke all the classifications that have been rushed through recently, trying to get land out of the hands of the people. There are a lot of things we could do. And I would submit to you that we ought to all seriously consider whether we want to do those things or whether we want to give a more accurate impression to our constituents back home of why we didn't do some of the things we could have done. Thank you.
The further business to come before the body under special orders. Committee announcements. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the House Commerce Committee will not meet this afternoon as scheduled. We have some conflicts and problems with members not being able to attend. So our 1:15 p.m. meeting will be canceled. Tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. we will start our sunset review on the Alaska Transportation Commission. And because there's not a morning floor session, it will continue for most of the morning. And then tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., we will continue with the Alaska Transportation Commission in a teleconferenced statewide hearing in the committee room.
Did you announce the time again on that, Mr. Brown? Tomorrow morning? Is that
8 a.m. tomorrow morning, 7 p.m. tomorrow evening.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Vice Chairman Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The State Affairs will meet today at 1:15 in 123A, and we're going to take up House Bill 13, Decentralization of Executive Branch, House Bill 156, Credited Service Peace Officers and Firemen, and House Bill 220, regarding compensation for certain state officers. Also, I would like to announce that we will meet tomorrow, State Affairs will meet tomorrow at 10 a.m., and the bills that will be taken up will be posted on the board outside the Speaker's office. Thank you.
Yeah. Chairman Meekins? Chairman Parr?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary Committee will meet at 3 this afternoon. Instead of what's shown on the calendar, we will be taking a final markup, hopefully, on House Bill 75, Public Information and Privacy.
Chairman Hilbert.
Mr. Speaker, the House Labor and Management will be meeting 8:30 in the morning to take up House Bill 214, the administration's unemployment bill.
Vice Chairman Munson.
Yes, the Hess Committee will meet at 1 o'clock today and will be taking up House Bill 79, relating to the practice of optometry, and we'll also finish with House Bill 179, Medical Facilities Authority. Thank you.
Are there further committee announcements? Incidentally, at least one member asked what the status is on the voting machines. Supposedly, there's a magic part that the word was it was supposed to come in today at the latest. Well, it hasn't come in until today, so hopefully it will come in today. There is a repairman locally here, so if the part comes in, supposedly the monster can get fixed, but I wouldn't bet on it. Representative Branson.
Mr. Speaker, since we won't meet tomorrow until 1 o'clock, I'd like to announce that the Republican luncheon will be at Sally's Kitchen, and the speaker will be Senate President and Governor Pro Tem Clem Tillion.
Representative Anderson.
May we be at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to announce that there will be a Democratic luncheon this afternoon at noon at the Baranoff at the Capitol Room, and our speaker, Pro Tem, is the speaker at that function, so I'd invite all interested Democrats and interested Republicans to please join
Mr. Miller there. If there's nothing further, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment till 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon.
Mr. Anderson moves that we stand in adjournment till 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Hearing no objections.